listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to audiochat.fakeologist.com. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists around the globe. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. To listen to the live stream, go to s3.fakeologist.com. Now, on with the audio chat.
Hello everybody, John LeBon here on 30th of July 2017, and it's been a little while since my last audio chat. It's been, I think, maybe 6 weeks, 5 weeks, maybe 6 weeks since I last popped into the audio chat. Boy, oh boy, does time go very quickly, very, very quickly indeed. So I thought I'd pop in and say hello to all of the Fakeologist.com listeners out there. How many Fakeologist listeners are out there? How many are there? I've asked Ab this a few times, and I think he intimated that it was in the low hundreds. I think that's what he suggested, and I find that believable. I would think it would probably be in the low hundreds out there. It would vary from audio chat to audio chat and that kind of thing, but I would think that for the typical audio chat posted to his blog, around the world, there would be 100, maybe 200 people who would download it with the intention of listening and would listen to a substantial portion of the MP3. That would be my guess. If I had to guess sort of, higher or lower, if you said to me, it's not the low hundreds, it's either higher or lower, I would guess lower. And the reason for that is because having been in this little scene for a few years now, I've come to see that the number of people who are really out there who know and or care about this stuff, very, very, very few, very, very few people. That's just the nature of the world in which we live. And so, if I upload a podcast to my Podbean account and it gets 200 listens, or it says that it's got 200 listens, then I infer from that that the number of people who've really listened is less again, obviously. Many people download and then never listen or only listen to a few minutes. So if I was getting 200 regularly with every Podbean, I'd be like, yeah, that's pretty cool. That's good. Considering what we're talking about and the audience that we're dealing with, that's a pretty good number. And a lot of people find that hard to believe. They're like, no, there's thousands. There's tens of thousands. My mate Bob from Globebusters is like, oh, there's millions. Nah, this is all silly, guys. There's really not that many. But those who are here, well, it's nice to know that others are out there, isn't it? And I've said many times how appreciative I am of this audio chat function and of what Ab does at Fakeologist. It's been good for me in many ways. It's also been a little bit negative for me, if I'm being perfectly honest. And I did notice that in a recent audio chat, Ab noticed, he made note of the fact that someone had contacted him to say that he was no longer going to be taking part in Fakeologist. This individual, who Ab did not name, had said that he was going to be doing other things with his life, that he had evolved or moved on. And this happens. This happens in all online communities. I think it happens in many so-called real-life communities as well. People come, they go. Sometimes they leave and you never hear from them. Sometimes they leave in a big huff and a puff. And sometimes they leave pleasantly and they say, look, thank you, but I'm moving on. So I'd love to know who it was who let Ab know that they were moving on. I've got my guesses, if I had to guess. But really, either way, good luck to that person. And this is just what we do, isn't it? We find things, we find them interesting. Sometimes we decide it's no longer interesting or it's no longer good for us or what have you. And for me personally, I could name several things that have been positive for me about being involved in a Fakeologist. We need to find a better word because I don't like the word community for a number of reasons, but you know what I'm trying to talk about. This group of people, some of them who get along, some who don't get along, some who talk behind the scenes, some who don't, some who put out their own content, some who don't put out their content, they're too busy or it's just not their thing or whatever. This loosely knit collection of people who all know that 9/11 was not an inside job, it was a made-for-TV movie. That really seems to be the one common theme that all of us can sort of agree upon. And then from there, there's a few other things that most of us agree on, but it sort of fractures from there, doesn't it? But it's nice to know, isn't it, that there are others out there. We would all feel better knowing that there are others out there who we can relate to in some way. And this world can be, from time to time, a seemingly lonely place, can't it? It can sometimes seem very lonely. You look around and you think, hold on a second, Kim Jong-un or Kim Jong-il or Kim Jong whatever his name is, do you actually believe he could press a button and that missiles would be fired and hit people with nuclear bombs? You actually really believe that? Holy fuck. You too? Do you also believe that? No? Why not? So you do think he has nukes, you just don't think he has missiles. Okay. Hey, how about you? Do you believe this? Really? All of you guys believe this? Have any of you, what's your best evidence, guys, that this guy has nuclear missiles? Is it just the news that we just saw? Is that, holy fuck. It can be very lonely, can't it? Or it can seem that way anyway. So to know that there's a website or there's this group of people out there who also don't believe that Kim Jong, whatever the hell his name is supposed to be, is any kind of threat to us, it's nice to know. It's nice to know that. It's nice to think that. I think it can be comforting, can't it? We all want to feel as though there are others out there who we can relate to or who can relate to us. I think it's a natural human desire. And so that's been good, I think, the last few years, knowing there are people out there I can talk to or who I can listen to. That's a positive. On the negative side, I think I have allowed myself to listen to people whose energy, if I can just use that word in a very broad sense, is very, very, very negative. Very, very negative indeed. And even if you think, oh, well, I disagree with that person about that, but it's no big deal. It's like, well, how much of an effect does it have if we're constantly listening to people who truly believe that they are under constant surveillance, constant attack, that there are boogeymen around every corner just waiting to do what exactly? What exactly are these boogeymen going to do? Huh? Let's pretend, for the sake of argument, that there are these agencies and they send people to make YouTube videos and to be page shills, right? Let's, for the sake of argument, let's accept that. What exactly are these page shills being sent here to do? Oh, they're sent here to spread disinfo. Oh, really? You know, lots of people are spreading misinfo quite voluntarily, of their own accord, all the time, in so-called real life and online. Like, they don't need to send paid shills to do that. There's plenty of people who do that voluntarily. Voluntarily, they'll do it. Some of them get paid to do it from their own supporters. It's like, hey, guys, we've got the flat earth truth. The flat earth is the umbrella conspiracy. It's going to bring down all the other conspiracies, guys. This is the umbrella conspiracy. So just send us some money and we'll launch a balloon and we're going to prove flat earth, guys. You see? So these guys are getting paid. But they don't need to be sent by an agency. They don't need to be sent by some overarching group. They'll do it of their own accord. You see what I'm trying to say? And so it's like, whether I'm dealing with someone who is spreading nonsense because they were sent by an agency or because they're doing it for the shekels from their supporters or because they really believe it, they really fully, what difference does it make? Their nonsense is their nonsense. You see? And I know for a fact that people are spreading complete nonsense. So I don't need to speculate about, ooh, they were sent. What difference does it make to me? There are people spreading nonsense. That's just how the world is. And you speak to the average person. The average person loves nonsense. They fill their lives with nonsense. That's what they do. So why spend or waste any of my time being haunted by these boogeymen? Ooh, he could be a boogeyman. She could be a boogeyman. I think he's a boogeyman. I think that guy's a boogeyman. Why? Why would I do that? I might not do that, but if I'm listening to people who constantly do that, what effect is that having on me to constantly be around these negative people? What effect does that have on me? I've been asking this question a lot lately, not just of myself, but of my listeners on YouTube and on my website, saying, guys, what effect is this having on us? Let's take a step back for a second. I've just spent 4 or 5 weeks free of uploading videos to YouTube and consuming a lot less content. What effect is this having on me surrounding myself with people or interacting with people who, honest to God, truly believe they are under attack from paid shills. And this is how they see the world. They're not analyzing people's claims of what's your evidence, what's your logic. It is, are you a paid shill? Is he a boogeyman? That's the first question, guys. Forget everything else this guy says. Is he a boogeyman? If that's how they see the world, what effect does that have on everyone else who interacts with them? And what effect does it have on me when I interact with these people? And I would suggest that for all of the good that I've gotten from Fakeologist, and I've promoted this site quite a lot, for all the good that I've got from it, I have also gotten some bad. I have to be honest about that. There's good and there's bad. And this is through no fault of any one particular individual, certainly not the fault of Ab. In fact, recently I've heard Ab sort of himself questioning this paid shills meme. So that's good to see. So I'm not holding any one person responsible. This is bigger than one person. This is a truth, a scene wide thing. This is a conspiracy wide thing. The whole conspiracy or alternative research scene has this boogeyman. The boogeyman. Guys, we're under attack from boogeymen. The boogeymen are out to get us because we're giving you the truth. We're under attack from boogeymen, guys. You trust me, don't you? Well, guess what? There's boogeymen out to get me. The boogeyman took down my YouTube channel. The boogeyman took down my PayPal. The boogeyman are sending me death threats, guys. The boogeyman. You see? Same nonsense. Boogeyman this, boogeyman that. That's how they see the world. And I do think being around these people and taking them seriously for as long as I did had a negative effect on me. And that's no one's fault but my own. Who was forcing me to take these people seriously? Nobody. It was something that I was doing, and I had to suffer the consequences, I guess. But I like to think that I can see now what's going on. You go to a stereotypical church of one denomination or another. They've got their boogeymen too, the devil, you know, the demons, evil, Satan. They've got their boogeymen, you know, boogeymen, guys, boogeymen. The people who run the show in our countries, you know, they've got their boogeymen too. Kim Jong-un, he's the boogeyman. You need us, guys. You need us because there's a boogeyman who's got a nuclear bomb strapped to a missile, guys. So you need us to protect you from the boogeyman. Boogeymen. If you want to control people's mind, you need to give them a boogeyman who you're going to protect them from. Oh, don't listen to the boogeyman, guys. Be scared of the boogeyman. Boogeymen around every corner. So that's something I want to share with you guys. Having 5 or 6 weeks away from this place and consuming a lot less content from not just from this platform, but from YouTube in general, I found myself thinking, man, I've got some good things from all of this, but I've also got some negative things. And the negative energies of these people who truly believe in boogeymen around every corner, it's not their beliefs that are the problem. It's the way that they interact with everyone around them, including me. It's like, man, this is sucking positive energy away from me. And it's really not helping me to be surrounded by these paranoid, delusional people. It's really not helping me. Just my opinion. But, who knows? Maybe there are boogeymen out there. Maybe there's a boogeyman paid shill listening to me right now. And maybe he's on the phone to his superior. He's like, that JLB guy, he reckons that us boogeymen don't exist. He's telling the world that we don't exist, guys. We release all of this Cass Sunstein material and we spread this boogeyman meme. And now we've got this guy questioning the boogeyman. You know, maybe, I don't know. I really doubt it. I mean, what do I even know about the CIA or the GCHQ or MI5 or any of these? What do I really know about them? Answer, nothing. Nothing, guys. I don't even know if they exist, to be honest with you. They might. But even if they do exist, what do they do there? What do their new recruits do? If you get recruited to the CIA, what do you actually do? I don't know. I honestly don't know. Do you? Do you know what they do there? I don't know. I've seen it on TV. Ooh, the CIA, ooh. What was it, the FBI, X-Files, you know, with David Duchovny. Ooh, X-Files, yeah, guys. They're looking through past unsolved cases. Yes, the X-Files. They're going through the unsolved cases, including paranormal cases, and they're trying to crack the cases, these secret agents in the FBI. Yeah, I don't know, guys. I just don't know. I don't know. And that's one thing that I think some people realize after a while here, and some people don't. We don't actually know that much, guys. We really don't know that much. I really do not know that much about who runs the world, how they run it, you know, their little agencies and branches and divisions and chapters and subdivisions, and God knows how they structure them. I don't know. I don't know. But that's not what people want to hear. People want to hear people who do know. Even if they don't know, they want to hear, oh yeah, we know guys. It's totally these boogeymen. It's totally those boogeymen. And this is how they operate, guys. And that's what people want. That's what the average person wants. They want answers. They want them now. They do not want questions, and they especially don't want questions of their preconceived notions. And if their preconceived notion is that they're so important, they've got so much truth, that boogeymen are being sent to spy on them or to disinfo them or to do whatever, if that's one of their preconceived notions, they do not want you coming along and saying, well, maybe that's happening, but have we got any evidence of these boogeymen? No, they don't want that. That's the last thing they want. And that's just how it is. That's just how it is, guys. That's just how it is. But anyway, enough about all of that, guys. Enough about all of that. I don't want to stay for too long. I wanted to read out some articles to you, and I don't know if these are true. So I want to run them past you guys. You guys tell me if you think these are true. This one is from the Washington Post, and it's dated November 3. Oh, how do you like that? 11/3/2015. By Brady Dennis. It's entitled, Nearly 60% of Americans, the highest ever, are taking prescription drugs. Again, this is from about 2 years ago, not quite 2 years ago, and it's from the Washington Post. Again, nearly 60% of Americans, the highest ever, are taking prescription drugs. I'll read out the first three paragraphs verbatim. Quote, nearly 3 in 5 American adults take a prescription drug, up markedly since 2000 because of much higher use of almost every type of medication, including antidepressants and treatments for high cholesterol and diabetes. In a study published Tuesday in the Journal of American Medical Association, researchers found that the prevalence of prescription drug use among people 20 and older had risen to 59% in 2012 from 51% just a dozen years earlier. During the same period, the percentage of people taking 5 or more prescription drugs nearly doubled to 15% from 8%. One likely factor driving the increased use, obesity. Researchers noted that 8 of the 10 most commonly used drugs in the US are for hypertension, heart failure, diabetes, and other elements of the cardiometabolic syndrome. In addition, another frequently prescribed drug treats gastroesophageal reflux, a widespread condition among the overweight or obese. End quote. So the key things there, according to this article, nearly 3 in 5 American adults take a prescription drug. That's more than half. Nearly 60% of American adults take at least one prescription drug, which is up since 2000. And let's see, many of these drugs are to do with the heart, diabetes, and other elements of the cardiometabolic syndrome. So in other words, they're not healthy. These people are not eating and or exercising properly. And so they're being given prescription drugs to solve whatever symptoms come as a result of their poor lifestyles. 3 out of 5, guys, according to this article in the Washington Post. Again, I'm not saying anything about the validity of their stats. I'm just saying this is the official story, according to WAPO. Let's move on to the next article that I've got lined up for you lovely people out there in Fakeology land. This one is from scientificamerican.com, and this one was published much more recently on December 13. What's that, 12-13, 2016? This one's entitled, 1 in 6 Americans takes a psychiatric drug. The byline is that antidepressants were most common, followed by anxiety relievers and antipsychotics. 2212. Okay, so let's read out this article verbatim. Quote, 1 in 6 US adults reported taking a psychiatric drug, such as an antidepressant or a sedative, in 2013, a new study found. New data comes from an analysis of 2013 Medical Expenditure Panel Survey, or MEPS, which gathered information on the cost and use of healthcare in the United States. An earlier government report from 2011 found that just over 1 in 10 adults reported taking prescription drugs for problems with emotions, nerves, or mental health, the authors wrote in a research letter published today in the journal JAMA Internal Medicine. Moore and Madison found that nearly 17% of adults in the US reported filling at least one prescription for a psychiatric drug in 2013. Antidepressants were the most common type of psychiatric drug in the survey, with 12% of adults reporting that they filled prescriptions for these drugs, the study said. In addition, 8.3% of adults were prescribed drugs from a group that included sedatives, hypnotics, and anti-anxiety drugs, and 1.6% of adults were given antipsychotics, the researchers found. End quote. So again, this is from Scientific American. This is from late last year, less than 12 months ago. And they're saying that one in six US adults reports taking a psychiatric drug, according to an official survey. One in six, 17%. So all other things being equal, if you're in a room with 20 people, for argument's sake, three of them.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Indeed we are. So yeah, one in six, three of them, if you're in a room with 20 people, all other things being equal, okay, not factoring in demographics or ages or any of the, you know, different groups that are either more likely or less likely to be on psychiatrics. Just generally speaking, a room of 20 people, about three of them are on these medications, guys. A room of 20. Seems like a lot to me. Seems like a lot of people. Call me old-fashioned. Carrying on with the same article, they say that psychiatric, I'll quote, psychiatric drug use differed among adults of different ages, sex, and race, the researchers found. For example, nearly 21% of white adults reported taking a psychiatric drug, compared with less than 9% of Hispanic adults, according to the report. Older adults also reported a higher rate of psychiatric drug use. One quarter of adults ages 60 to 85 reported taking at least one of these drugs, compared with less than 10% of adults aged 18 to 39, the researchers found. In addition, nearly twice as many women as men reported taking psychiatric drugs, 21% compared with 12%, according to the report. End quote. Then it goes on to list the most common antidepressants: Zoloft, Celexa, Xanax. On and on and on it goes. So the key points to take away from there is, yeah, one in six people, 17%, of all US adults is on antidepressant drug or a psychiatric drug of some type, including antidepressants. But then within that group, one in five white people. And within all groups, it's far more women than men, almost twice as many, 21% of women compared to 12% of men. So I haven't gone and checked the official, like the original source data. Again, I'm just taking these claims on face value for the sake of conversation here. This is from Scientific American, another mainstream outlet. Without looking at this specific breakdown, if there is one included for race and sex and age at the same time, from this we can infer that white women, 60 and older, are hepped up on goofballs big time on these antidepressants and other drugs. That's what we can infer from the information that they've given us there. White people in particular, women in particular, and older people are hepped up on psychiatric drugs. Now, I don't pretend to know that many people, but I know enough to know that certainly in Australia this is true. A lot of people are being prescribed for these kinds of drugs. And not only that, but a lot of people I know were previously on them. So I wonder how much do these statistics take into account people who were previously on them. That is, if say one in five women in the US are currently on psychiatric drugs, how about the ones who were previously on them? If we count them, I mean, how many people now is what I want to know. How many people in the US right now are not on antidepressants and never have been is what I would like to know. And when you start looking at some of these figures, these official figures, it would seem that officially it's not that many. It's not that many. We're all hepped up on goofballs, guys, on official medication goofballs. Fascinating to me. And the image that they've got for one of these articles is, sure enough, the pill bottle, the plastic pill bottle tipped over on the side, all the pills scattered out. Like a magic potion. The next article from Huffington Post has for seven different prescription bottles, all orange plastic with a white lid, with little labels on the front. And you got the white pills. This one's green. These ones are half red, half white. These ones are half, I don't know, purple, half white. These ones are all white. And, yeah, prescription medications. I'm going somewhere with this, guys. Bear with me. I'm going somewhere with this. This final one, really quickly, this final one is from Huffington Post. This one is dated 19th of June 2013, so only 4 years ago, give or take. It's entitled Prescription Drugs, 7 out of 10 Americans Take at Least One, Study Finds. Quote, a new study from Mayo Clinic researchers reveals how many Americans are on prescription drugs, and it's a lot of us. A study published in the journal Mayo Clinic Proceedings shows that 7 out of 10 Americans take at least one prescription drug. The most commonly prescribed drug is antibiotics, taken by 17% of Americans, followed by antidepressants and opioids, each taken by 13% of Americans. Other findings in the report, more than half of Americans take two prescription medications, and 20% of Americans are on at least five prescription medications. Cholesterol-lowering drugs are prescribed to 11% of people in the study. More women than men receive prescription medications. Antidepressant prescriptions are more common among women than men and are more common among women ages 50 to 64, an age group in which nearly 25% of women take antidepressants. End quote. So there we have a more specific little bit of information or data, don't we? A quarter of women aged 50 to 64 are taking antidepressants. One in four, guys. This is from the Huffington Post 4 years ago. One in four women aged 50 to 64 are on an antidepressant. One in four. Are you kidding me? Now, again, I don't know if these articles are legitimate. I don't know if the so-called studies that they're based on are legitimate. I honestly don't know. I haven't double-checked the primary source documentation. However, based on the small sample size of people who I know in the so-called real world, these figures do bear out. I do believe people are very heavily medicated for not just the cardiovascular or cardio, whatever the hell they called that, not just for heart and diabetes and that, but also for, you know, mental illness. There's a mental illness epidemic, would you believe? And you might say to me, JLB, why the hell are you reading out all these articles? What do they have to do with anything? Why are you reading these out? Well, if we just take these things on face value, these claims about how medicated people are on face value, then it's very clear, isn't it? It's very clear that we live in a sick society. That is, even according to their own claims, people are so sick that one in four women aged 50 and above is on antidepressants. One in four, right? And then just people in general. You know, 50% of people are on one medication. Yeah? One in six people is on some kind of mental illness prescription. This is crazy, guys. This is crazy, and it's happening. It's happening right now as we speak. And I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking, how many people are turning up to doctors, to their GP? I don't know if you guys call them GPs in America, but in Australia we just call a regular doctor a GP, and then they send you off to specialists, yeah, who are unhappy with their lives. And so they find themselves struggling to get out of bed. They find themselves struggling to care about their future, have any hope for the future. They're no longer putting time into their own real relationships, you know, and they have all of these symptoms. They're not sleeping properly. They have all these symptoms that we would associate with depression, mental illness, et cetera. They're being medicated. And I wonder how many of these people, just like me and just like many of you, where they're just not happy with life in general. They're not jumping out of bed every morning because this world doesn't really seem that good. You know what I mean? It just doesn't seem that good. How many of them? Because I've been very clear for a long time now. I don't pretend to be that happy. I'm not that happy. No, I am not that happy. And in fact, what prompted me to be on Discord with the microphone set up tonight was I was having a chat with another fakeologist, won't name their name, but they sent me a message saying, do you want to have a chat? And I was like, sure. It's a Sunday night. Don't really want to make any videos tonight. Let's have a chat. And what this person suggested to me was that they're not that happy either. They weren't saying they were depressed or anything. They weren't complaining or anything. It was just more like, you know what? We know all of this stuff, but does it make us happy? And I'm like, no, I don't think it does make us happy. To be perfectly honest with you, I do not believe it makes us that happy. And I'm very clear about that. For all the stuff that I feel like I've learned, and it's a lot in 3 years, guys, it is a lot, as I'm sure many of you guys can relate to. You learn a lot very quickly if you put the time in to do the reading and to do the thinking and what have you. You learn a lot, but does it make you happy? And my answer is no. No, it hasn't made me happy. There are some things where I'm better off, you know, in terms of what I know about nutrition and diet and just general health now. Sure, sure. And also people. I mean, it's going to be very difficult for anyone to scam me in the future compared to in the past. It's going to be very, very difficult. You know, I see through it now too easily. I see through some pretty big scams now. So any small-time huckster is going to have a lot of trouble scamming me, especially now because I've developed my logical abilities and I analyze what people are saying straight away now. You know, it's like Cypher in the Matrix. I always make this analogy to Cypher in the Matrix when he's looking at the screens with the green writing going down the screens and he's like, yeah, after a while you don't see the green letters on the screen now. You just see blonde, brunette, redhead. You just see the truth in inverted commas. That's how it gets when you understand how many lies are out there and how easily they deceive the lemming masses. You tend to get this ability to sort of see through the lies. So in that sense, I feel like I'm better off. So there's several senses where I feel like I'm better off for sure, but would I say that I'm happier? No, definitely not. No, definitely not. Would I say that I'm depressed or upset? No, I wouldn't say that either. It's difficult to say if I'm happier than 3 years ago, but it's very hard to isolate just what we know about the world from just general life. I mean, I'm 3 years older now. Maybe a typical 26, 27-year-old is going to be happier than a 29 or a 30-year-old. Do you know what I mean? Or maybe at that age, you've got other things going on that either make you happier or less happy. So it's hard to isolate is what I'm trying to say. Life goes on regardless of what we feel like we're learning or unlearning, as the case may be. So I don't know, guys. I don't know if I'm happier or less happy. Very hard to say. Very, very difficult to say. I don't know. And so I look at these statistics of all of these people being medicated and I think, well, on the health side, I'm definitely physically healthier. I mean, I'm less fat than I used to be. There's no doubt about that. And, I'm eating a lot less bad food than I used to and I'm drinking a lot less alcohol. So those are all good things. So I'm less likely to be on any of those. And also I just don't trust the medical industry. So I would never go on these stupid pills for heart problems or whatever, right? Obviously. So in that sense, I'm definitely better off. But then you look at all these people who are on medications for depression or whatever, and okay, I also won't go on those medications, but I don't think I'm necessarily any happier than the dude who walks into a GP, gets referred to a psychologist. The psychologist is like, well, let me just dust off my DSM-5, I think they're up to. Do you struggle to sleep at night? You do? Tick. Are you spending less time with your friends than you were in the past? You are? That's not a good tick. Have you taken time off work due to unhappiness? You have? Tick. That's 3 out of 3 so far. 3 more from this list and we can diagnose you, buddy boy. Do you ever think about self-harm? No? All right, that's okay. We've got more questions here. Have you had any major breakdowns in public in the last 12 months? No? All right, we've got more questions here though. Do you worry about the future at least once a day, every day? You do? Tick. We're going to get there. Bang. You tick off enough of these boxes and bang. We can say that you are suffering from depression. This is textbook depression, guys, straight from the DSM-5, whatever they're up to. Textbook, guys, you've ticked off enough of boxes. Now it's just a matter of how we treat this problem. You need to exercise more. You need to come to counseling sessions. And if that doesn't work, I'm going to put you on medication. Or maybe they just put you straight on medication. I don't even know. I don't even know how these people roll, to be perfectly honest. I've heard anecdotal accounts from people who I know in real life. But can you extrapolate from you know, 3 or 4 instances across how all of this industry works? Of course not. So I don't really know how these people roll. I've never even spoken to a psychologist or to a counselor in a clinical setting. In fact, I don't even know if I've spoken to one outside of a clinical setting. I mean, I might have. They just might not have told me what they did for a profession. I could have talked to one today for all I know, just at the cafe. You get what I'm trying to say here, guys. I don't know how these people roll, but where I'm going with this is the dude who's walking in to his GP or to the counsellor being prescribed something, I've got no reason to think that he's any less happy than I am. He might just not understand that there's actually very good reasons why we would not feel all that fulfilled with our lives. Some of us. I mean, some people do lead fulfilling lives. They've got partners who they still adore and get along with well. They've got children who are well-behaved and are succeeding in life, and they have hobby. There are some people who are fulfilled with life, and that's terrific. But I think most people who I know, certainly my age, there is a lack of fulfillment, because most of us, I mean, what am I, almost 30? Most people my age who I know do not have children. Those who do, generally, it wasn't necessarily a planned thing, if I can put it in those terms. So, you know, that comes with its own, you know, issues in terms of domestic situations and what have you. And there's just this general lack of hope for the future. That's what I think. That's what I think about people my age generally today. I'm not saying it's any different to the past. I don't know how it was 50 years ago. I don't know. I do not know. I don't think many people do know. But certainly today, there's this idea of where the hell are we going? What the hell is going on here? You know what I mean? What the hell is going on? What do we have to look forward to? Seriously, in 20 or 30 years, what is going to be happening that I have to look forward to, or that we? And there's this lack of sense of, you know, people don't feel like they're part of a community at all. At all. You know what I mean? There's no idea of civic pride. There's no idea of, well, we're improving as a nation, and I feel good that I'm doing my part. No, there's very little. I don't really think I know anyone who actually thinks that way, that there's any pride, civic pride. I don't. The only hope for the future that I hear from people is materialistic, in the sense of, well, I'll own this home, it'll be worth more. That's off the top of my head, the only real hope that I can think of people who I know. And again, I don't really know that many people. I'll be perfectly honest, I don't really know that many people. But of the people who I do know, the people I speak to, and the impressions that I get, I guess, I don't want to say secondhand, but, you know, I do read a lot the opinions of people. I read a lot of blogs and microblogs, places like Reddit. I try and get an idea of what people are saying. And I don't get any sense that people have any real hope for the future, people my age I'm talking about, other than if they've bought a house, if they're in a mortgage, you know, in 20 or 30 years, they'll own it, it'll be theirs, and it'll be worth a lot of money. That's about it as far as hope for the future goes. Now, if we're in a world where there is, at least among my generation, I think among others as well, this little hope for the future, then is it any wonder that people are so unhappy and so unfulfilled? Is it any wonder? I don't think so. I think that makes perfect sense that that would be the case. And then I look at a place like the so-called truth movement, you know, what I call it the activism scene, alternative conspiracy truth. I call it the activism scene. Because one of the things that Ab does that I do like, he always tries to come up with new terms. You know, he tries to own the terminology. I think that's terrific. So he comes up with things like EGI, even though I don't personally believe in the whole EGI thing, or at least not the way that it's marketed sort of at fakeologists and other places, even though I don't really buy into it. The idea of calling it EGI, I think that's clever. You know, get away from transvestigation, call it EGI. If Ab can seed that meme, he's done very well, and he's done it with other things as well. I like that. I'm trying to do it with activism, the activism scene. Alternative conspiracy truth. Alternative research. It's alternative. Oh, yeah. Oh, conspiracies. Have you heard about this conspiracy? Oh, it's the truth. It's a truth movement. Activism. And of course it works on another level, because most people who are here, it is all just an act. It's like, oh yeah, man, I really care about the truth. Oh yeah, cool. Like what research have you done? Oh, I watched this guy's video. I said, what research have you? Yeah, I watched his video. Okay. It's all a bit of an act, really. Oh yeah, man, I'm here to improve myself. Oh really? What improvements have you made? Oh, I know more about the truth now. I know that we don't live on a giant spinning ball.
Yeah, but have you actually improved yourself?
I have. I just told you.
So you're not really here to improve yourself. Okay, I see. It's all just an act. The activism scene. You think about what draws people here. I think an element of it is hope, either on the individual level or on the group level. You know, on the individual level, it's like, oh, if I learn the truth, that'll make me happy. You know, if I learned about this and that made me happier. And so if I learn more truth, that'll make me happy. And, you know, on the individual level. And then also on the group level, oh, we're part of a movement. We're going to spread this, guys. We're going to spread the truth about 9/11 was an inside job. Or we're going to spread the truth about the Jews run the banks. Or we're going to spread the truth about the earth is flat, whatever it is. This group identity that it gives people that they're yearning for. People are yearning for some kind of identification with a group and hope. So if you believe that this movement's going to get bigger, if you believe that it's going to spread and it's going to change the system, Boy, oh boy, is that a lot of hope. It gives people a lot of hope. And so if we do live in a time where a lot of people are pretty hopeless, they feel lost, they don't feel like there's much hope for the future, for themselves or for their societies, then anyone who can come along and sell hope, boy, oh boy, can he make some money. And really, what is the entire pharmaceutical industry? You know, it does a lot of things, but what's one thing that it does? It's hope. It's like, really? You've got all these symptoms? Guess what? I've got a solution for you. You take these things this often and you can hope for a better future, because in 6, 8, 12 weeks, 3 months, whatever it takes, you're going to be healthier again. You're going to be happier again. Whatever your ailments, take these things in this orange bottle. It gives people hope, you know. And look, I'm not even going to get into placebo today, but if you look into placebo, a lot of what people say about it is bull crap, but a lot of it is true. A lot of positive thinking actually does work, amazingly so. So it doesn't even matter if these bloody green pills on my screen right now, it doesn't matter if they're sugar pills. A lot of people are going to benefit from the hope that the pills give them, and they'll feel better. So the medical industry, I think, to a large extent, all it's doing is selling hope to people and making a lot of money, making an awful lot of money. Oh, really? You're depressed about the world? Well, have we got a solution for you? Just take this Zoloft or Xanax or God knows what they're prescribing, and you can hope for a better future. Whatever misery you feel today, take these pills and you probably won't feel it in 6 to 12 months or whatever. It's all just fake hope. And that's one thing that I personally, as someone who now runs my own website, I try my best to sort of say to people, I've got no hope to sell here for my friends, no hope whatsoever. There might be some good things that you can learn here that you can put into how you live your life and you'll be better off. Maybe that's possible. I can't say that that won't happen. But I'm not going to sit here and pretend that if you listen to anything I have to say or read any of my words or watch any of my videos, that it's going to give you hope for the future. And I don't really want you to have any hope for the future based on anything you see on my website or anybody else's website. Seems to me that if you're going to have hope, it should come entirely from within, not from what you see on a TV screen or a computer screen or a mobile phone screen, which is how most people consume their content these days, I've learnt. Shouldn't come from external sources, should come from within, I would think. That's my opinion. And no, I don't want to sell hope, guys, even though I can see now just how much money is in selling hope. That's really what people want. Seems to me like more than anything else, they just want hope. They just want hope for the future. They want hope for tomorrow. They want hope for 3 months from now. They want hope for the distant future. They want hope for their children. They want hope for their grandchildren. They want hope. People want hope. Tell me, guys, if you can think of one thing that is better to sell to people than hope, please tell me. Please tell me, because it seems to me like hope is the main thing, guys. That's where the money is. It's in the hope. And you look at these statistics about the medication industry and I think, well, there's lots of things that can be said about it. But I'll say this. These people are selling hope in a bottle. Hope. Hope for the future. Hope. And you can see why it's so attractive to people. They want hope, because where else are they getting it? Where else are they getting their hope? I'll share with you guys, before I get going, I'll share one personal anecdote from before I learned about media fakery, but when I'd already started asking some serious questions. And there was a guy, his name was Gary Greenberg. I could probably go and find his book. It's in that blue tub just behind me, but he wrote a book about the nonsense of the psychological, psychiatric industry, if you like. And you know what I might do? Just give me a second. That's the bottom of the tub. I can't be bothered, but it's in there. And it's a book. I will think of the name of it. It's a clever name. Anyway, it's a book by a guy who is a psychotherapist, and he talks about the psychological and psychiatric industry. And he talks about the DSM. In fact, that's what it's about. It's called Book of Woe. Book of Woe is what it's called. And it's specifically about the Diagnostics and Statistics Manual. And again, they're up to 4 or 5. And he was writing about the process that goes into producing the DSM. And even just knowing the history, once you see the history of the DSM, that's all you need to know that you're dealing with nonsense. And anyway, I went to a book reading that he was doing. There's a book you know, every city has its like trendy suburbs, I guess, or it's like, bohemian or, you know, intelligent or progressive suburbs, I guess. Well, anyway, Brisbane's is known as the West End, and they've got a bookstore there that has people come and give book readings. They actually had a political thing there as well. I went to that as well, the same place. They had a few politicians up on stage talking about Australia and the future and blah, blah, blah. And I went along. That's the kind of, I used to be into politics, guys. I'm not proud of it, but we all go through different phases, I guess. Anyway, that bookstore, they had a book reading from a guy called Gary Greenberg, reading from his book, Book of Woe. And he was talking about basically how a lot of psychology and psychiatry is crap. You know, and he wasn't dumping on the industry because he's still in it. He was simply saying that the DSM is largely arbitrary and subjective. You know, they give you for any particular ailment, there might be, for argument's sake, there might be 10 things on that list, and if you have 7 of them, you can be diagnosed with that condition. You know, just to give a basic idea of what he was talking about. And then, you know, the 10 things that are listed there, who decides that, and how do they decide that, and how has that changed, so on and so forth. And anyhow, he gets through his book reading, his little speech, and his initial question and answer with the host or what have you, and then it's time to move on to questions from the audience. Well, a guy stands up, a tall guy. He might have been 6'1", 6'2", maybe, look, we're going back a few years here. He might have been 50 years old, I'm not sure. And what does he say? He says, "I'm a psychiatrist, and I disagree with you, and what you're saying is blasphemous and blah, blah, blah." And he lost his shit. This guy completely lost his shit. Like, in a pub, there must have been 50 of us there. Like, it was a decent crowd. And everyone's cordial and sort of just enjoying a night out, you know, listening to a book reading. We're all feeling really smart, like really smart people. That's what you do at book readings. You feel like you're so smart for being there, I guess. And so we're all happy. Everyone's cool. Except this guy. He loses his shit and starts going off at Gary Greenberg. And this guy's meant to be a psychiatrist. And I was probably about, I don't know, 25, 26 at the time, I would say. But going back maybe 4 years here. And I'm sitting there thinking, no matter what's in that book, and no matter what this Gary Greenberg guy is saying, you're telling me you're a psychiatrist and you can't even control your own emotions in a public, like, you know that everyone's watching you right now. You've just told us who you are and what you're doing, and you're going to have an emotional outburst, and your job is to medicate people whose own emotions are not in order? What the fuck? You know what I mean? And so, I've known about the fact that this whole chemical imbalance in the brain thing, I've known that that was bullshit for a long time. And looking back now, I look at some of the responses that I've gotten from people and I've said, chemical imbalance, you know, it's a myth, right? And they're like, no, it's not a myth. These pills are helping me because of my chemical imbalance. And it's like, now that I know what I know, why, if someone says to me that these pills are helping him because of a chemical imbalance, I wouldn't try and tell them that that's a myth. I'd be like, oh, really? That's okay, fair enough. I'll just try and change the topic or walk away or something. What I wouldn't do is be like, chemical imbalance. Bro, that's a myth. The medical industry admitted that was a myth 10, 15 years ago, bro. What are you talking about? It was basically a marketing exercise that was passed off as the truth, but it was debunked by the official outlets a long time ago, bro. There's no chemical imbalance in your brain, my friend. Those pills might be helping you, but it's not fixing chemicals in the brain. What the hell are you talking about? Nah, I wouldn't do that. I'd be like, oh, okay, fair enough. Why would I try and take away that story? That story is helping him, or at least he thinks it is. Why would I try and take that away from him? I know that now. I didn't know that. I didn't know that a few years ago. Didn't know that people need these stories to give them hope. The stories give them hope, my friends. That's what's happening. And so, yeah, the medical industry, I think there's lots of people out there now who are very, very skeptical of the medical industry, and they can see it in their own lives, in their friends, family, maybe their own experience. They know that something is not right, and they know about that. But they don't know about media fakery. They don't know that there were no planes on 9/11. They don't know that the TV can and does lie all the time. They don't know that V2 rockets are fake and that air-to-air missiles today are probably also fake. They don't know any of this stuff. They might be interested in it, though. They might be interested in it because I think once you start to learn how there is fakery around every corner and how basically everything is just one big joke. It's all a big joke. It's all just lie to people for one reason or another, make your money from the lies, whether you're selling missiles or pills or whatever nonsense it is. It's all part of the same mind control. As you get a bigger picture, everything else makes more sense. The whole medical industry scam, psychiatry scam makes more sense to me now from a whole bunch of other things I would have learned about, many of them from this website, from Fakeology, which I'm very happy and thankful for. Everything makes a lot more sense now, guys. I feel like I can interact with the world better having broadened my understanding of the fakery. And that's the reason I tell that anecdote, is to sort of give you guys a background in the things that I was interested in before I got into media fakery and the relevance that I see, you know, that it's all, I think it's all part of one broader lie system. That's what I think is going on. And yeah, but anyway, I've said enough, guys. I just wanted to pop in and say hello and do a little audio recording. The great thing about these audio recordings is that I can't go back and edit them. They're just out there now. I've got this problem where if I'm like, oh, I'll make a quick update for the members of the website, I might only record for 30 or 40 minutes. But then I go back into post-production, I put overlays on the video, edit out all the ums and the ahs and, you know, the sneezes or the coughs or whatever. And then I edit and then I render it and then I check the rendering, then I upload that, and it's just a lot of time and effort. Whereas if I just do one of these, it's like, bang, I turn my computer off, I go to bed. Tomorrow it's uploaded by Ab and that's it, it's done. You know, and that's a good thing because it's very easy to be very much a perfectionist with these things. It takes up way too much of my time. So that's another thing that I'm thankful for with Ab. I can just come and record this and he uploads it to his website. I can promote it via my website and saves me a lot of time, lets me get some things off my chest and what have you. And a few dozen, maybe a few hundred, who knows, maybe a few thousand people around the world, probably a few hundred, a couple hundred maybe, listen and then maybe I get some feedback. Maybe I get some feedback from people. So, guys, my question to you is, if you were trying to make money, can you think of any easier way to do it than to give people hope? What is easier to sell than hope? You guys tell me. I'd be very surprised if anyone has got something better, but I'm all ears. What is better to sell than hope? Because I, for one, I'm not interested in selling hope. I don't pretend to have a lot of it myself for the, certainly not for the masses, guys. The masses are what they are. This is another thing that gets me. It's like, why are these people out there proselytizing their new truth, whether it's flat earth or Jews run the banks or media fakery, 9/11, whatever it is. Why are people out there trying to proselytize to others? You know what I mean? I think I know why I was doing it in the past, because I bought into the idea of a truth movement. I bought into this idea that everyone was going to, you know, maybe not everyone, but a large percentage of people were going to learn the truth and change was going to happen. Yeah, you know, I bought into all of that. But, you know, I bought into it. It didn't take me that long to realize that I'd bought a lemon. I'd bought a lemon. It didn't take me that long. Now I look back and I think, well, I can see why I wanted to spread that and to share that and to proselytize. I can see now because it made me feel better. It gave me hope. If I was converting people to my new way of thinking, it gave me hope for the future and it sort of validated my beliefs. If I could convince somebody to my way of thinking, that would validate my beliefs, yeah? Now I'm like, no, I'm not trying to proselytize or convince people to my way of thinking at all. It doesn't really... What difference does it make to me? If someone believes that the earth is flat, for instance, if they truly believe that, cool, all right. I don't. I think there's some big problems with it, but all right. You really believe you live on a giant spinning ball? Okay, fair enough. I don't agree with you, but all right, that's great. What else is happening? You see, I don't have to spread it. These people who are still trying to proselytize, spread their belief systems. I think even if consciously they have the best of intentions, it, really deep down, it's all about them. It's all about their own existence. It gives them hope for the future, gives them validation for today and for the past too. It's like, oh, I've spent 10 years studying conspiracies. You know, if they can convert someone to their way of thinking, it kind of justifies their 10 years, doesn't it? You know, so it gives them sort of justification for the past, validation for the present, and hope for the future if they can convert people to their way of thinking. Whereas me, I'm like, well, this is just what I think. If you can point out the logical or factual errors in what I'm saying, That'll definitely help me. I'd appreciate that. But I've also come to learn very few people are here for that. They're not here to have a civil, rational discussion about the evidence and the logic. It's too much effort or it's not very entertaining. Or it's just not up their alley. They'd far rather speculate or storytell or, you know, boogeyman guys, boogeyman. This guy's a boogeyman. You know, they get off on the paranoia. You know, humans are creatures of habit. That's another thing that I learned it from Ab, but hearing it from him and thinking about what he had to say, it's like he's quite right. Humans are creatures of habit. No doubt about that. Even in this realm of the online truth scene, it's all habits. You know, if they're in the habit of being like, oh, everything's bad and they've got boogeymen out to get us. And it's like if that's how they are, that's probably how they're going to be tomorrow. No matter what anyone says or does, that's probably how they're going to be tomorrow. If there's someone who listens to podcasts, who think that that's research, but do no reading, if that's what they've done for the last 2 years, that's what they're probably going to do for the next 2 years. They're probably going to listen to podcasts and do no actual research if that's what they've been doing. If there's someone who is actually happy, they wake up and they're happy, you know, they think, oh, today we're going to get one step closer to whatever they think is coming, whatever positive thing they think is on the horizon. That's probably how they're going to be tomorrow. You know, humans are amazing creatures of habit. And actually, I was chatting about this with the same gentleman before I started this recording. It was like, because he was telling me that back in college, he was much happier before he learned the truth. He's like, I was much happier back then. I was leading a more, he didn't use the word hedonistic, but that's what he was getting at. Leading the more life that sort of is sold to us on TV. And I was a lot happier back then. And then I learned the truth and now I'm not so happy. And I'm like, man, I don't think I was any happier back then either. You know, I look back at my sort of university days and I don't think I was that happy back then either. I don't think I'm any less happy now than I was back then. You know, back then I used to drink a lot more and yeah, I went out a lot more and had a lot more quote unquote friends, but they weren't really friends. And I think I knew that. And drinking, oh yeah, go out, have fun, talk a lot of shit, whatever. But you know, the next day, so what? You know what I mean? It's gone now. You know, it's not really fulfilling, which is why you keep doing it. You don't go out, have a great night, and then oh, that's it for me now. That's it. Time to go and be productive. No, you go out and do it again the next weekend. It's like, why? Because it's not fulfilling. That's quite obviously the case. So yeah, I can't sit here and say, oh, learning the truth made me unhappy. It's like, no, I don't really think I've ever been that happy or that unhappy. I've pretty much been, you know, just medium, I think, you know, so can't say the truth made me happy or unhappy. Well, and again, I'm not even pretending that I have the truth. Just I've learned a whole bunch of things that I didn't used to know. The chemicals in the brain one, example being one, I used to completely believe the chemicals in the brain thing. I used to completely believe that. And now I don't. That's one example of many. And it's like, well, you know, I don't really think I was that happy in the past. I don't really think I'm that happy now. But I've never felt the need to go to a doctor and be prescribed things either. But apparently many people around you guys as well, they do. But I've got a sneaking suspicion they're not actually any less happy, many of them. I've got a sneaking suspicion many of them aren't that much less happy than me. They don't understand why they're not happy. Me, I've got a good idea of why. I don't feel a sense of community. I don't really feel a great sense of, I don't see things getting better. I mean, a lot of things that I don't like are just going to keep getting worse. I mean, they're teaching children in school now, this is dead set, that the gender is fluid. The kind of shit that 10 years ago you'd only hear about in social sciences at universities, that shit's being taught to children now. So it's like, guys, what do you think's going to be happening with children in 10 or 15, 20 years, man? Like, we're fucked. You know, everyone knows shit's fucked. This is crazy what's going on with children. You know, so I'm not looking forward to seeing what happens, you know, when these children hit 20, 25. It's going to be the part of me that is very empathetic for my fellow man. He's going to be that part of me is going to be very, very upset each and every time it sees these fucked up people covered in tattoos and other self-mutilation, you know, self-hatred, self-mutilation, which is all it is. Let's be honest here. Let's be straight up. You know, like, no, I'm not looking forward to that one bit, you know. So where I am unhappy, I've got a pretty good idea of where it is. It's a lack of sense of community and a lack of sense of hope for the future. Whereas the people who are like, oh, I'm going to go to a doctor or whatever, I just don't think they've identified why. Like, guys, there's reasons why. And these are just two reasons. There are many others, I'm sure. But, you know, they're like, I need a solution. And the medical industry is like, well, we'll give you a solution. Here you go. It's in an orange bottle. Take two a day or whatever. I don't know how many you have to take of these things. So, guys, you're not alone. You're not alone. A lot of people feel the same way. A lot of people feel a lack of purpose. You know, it was only two generations ago. You grew up as a child. You knew your role in the family. And then you went off and found a partner. And you guys had a family. That was the fun part of being an adult, was now you get to have children of your own. Like that was a thing that you do as an adult. Whereas now it's like children, that'll just get in the way of a career. We're adults now. We have careers. We make money. We spend money. That's what adults do. Kids, that can come later. You know what I mean? So everyone had that sense of, you know, community on the micro level and on the macro level. You know, they were all part of the same, you know, rearing children society. And they all had hope for the future because it's like, well, we're going to have children and, you know, we're going to raise the children well and they're going to have children and it's, you know, we're all going to be happy, blah, blah, blah. Not so much anymore. People don't have that. They don't have a sense of community. They don't have a sense of hope for the future. And of course, purpose as well. Like, if you believe your purpose is to become educated to some extent, get a job, get a partner, pardon me, and then have a family, like you have a role and you fulfill that role, that's your purpose. So you have a sense of purpose, this inherent sense of purpose. People don't have that these days, man. People who are 30 years old don't have that anymore. Again, like I was trying to explain earlier, the people I know who have children, in many cases, it wasn't a 100% intentional thing. And most of them don't have children. Most of my people I grew up with and what have you don't have children. So it's not considered your purpose anymore. So you take away their sense of purpose, you take away their sense of community, you take away their sense of hope for societal or individual future. Of course people are unhappy. You know? Of course they're not very happy. It's natural. But I think a lot of people have it in their mind, it's like, oh no, if I'm unhappy, it's because I've got a chemical imbalance in my brain or there's something wrong with me. It's like, nah, there's not necessarily something wrong with you. It's just that you haven't probably worked out why you're not feeling particularly motivated to get out of bed or to go and hang out with people or to sort of work towards a future that you're not looking forward to. You just haven't identified the problems. Someone else is going to give you a fake set of problems and a fake solution. They're going to make money from doing it. And they're making a lot of money based on those articles that we read earlier, and they're making a lot of money. I mean, how much is the pharmaceutical industry worth? I mean, we can't even trust the figures they give us, but I mean, I've never Googled how much is the pharmaceutical industry worth. I've never Googled it. Let's do it right now. Let's have some fun. How much is the pharmaceutical industry worth? Oh, it's come up with an Australian one. Obviously, me being here in Brisbane, Australia. No, I want the global farm. There we go. Global pharmaceutical industry. Let's find out. The pharmaceutical industry is responsible for the development, production, blah, blah, blah. Revenue of the worldwide pharmaceutical market, $1.072 billion USD. That is $1 trillion. $1 trillion. Trillion dollars. American. All right, then how much is the psychiatric pharmaceutical industry worth? And let's have a look. Global market for mental health drugs to be worth $88 billion in... This is an article from 2011. And guess what date this one is dated to? July 11, 2011. July 11. The 7s and the 11s every... Anyway, so this is from 6 years ago, guys. Holy crap, 6 years ago. And it says that it's going to be worth $80 billion in 2010. That's the global market for mental health. $80 billion. Now, of course, these are just figures, and, I mean, how much can you trust and blah, 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 but I think we can all agree there's a lot of money in psychiatric drugs. There's a lot of money. There's a lot of money in it. So it's like there's a whole bunch of people, a whole bunch of people out there who don't feel particularly purposeful, hopeful, or belonging. There you go. Instead of calling it community, they just don't feel that sense of belonging. So no belonging, no purpose, no real hope for the future other than materialistic gains in real estate. Is it any wonder they're not feeling particularly motivated to be in the system? I would say no. I'd say if anything, it's a wonder that other people don't feel that way. You know what I mean? And good on them. The people who are my age who have adjusted to the system and they enjoy being in the system and they're truly happy, I say good on them. Good on them. You know, that's another trap that I think a lot of people fall into. It's like, oh, well, those people who are happy in the system, they just don't understand that they're cogs in the wheel, and they don't understand that they're just the livestock in the system. And, you know, it's like, what the hell are you talking about? If they're genuinely happy, even if it is to other people, to me or to you, deluded, even if that is the case, for argument's sake, so what? If they're happy, good on them. You know, I envy that. Good on these people who are happy. You know, so I'm sure there are some people out there who are. They're truly happy for whatever reason. You know, some people are just like that. I've met a few of them, not for a long time, but I remember when I was younger, I met a few people who were just like that. They were just happy people. You know, good on them. But most people, certainly my age, in my experience, they're not particularly happy, and it's really no wonder. But we've got a medical industry who are like, oh, it's... not happy, you've got a mental health problem. We can fix that right up for you, buddy boy. Give you these pills. That'll fix you right up. So, yeah, anyway, I've rambled a lot tonight, guys, but hopefully you can forgive me for that. 30th of July, 2017, so think we'll wrap it up there. I really haven't had too much structure with this one tonight. Just feel like getting a few things off my chest. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. I'll, if Av uploads it, which I hope that he does, I'll link to it on my website and just say, hey guys, if you want to hear me ramble about the medical industry and happiness and these kinds of things, by all means do. But yeah, they've got a lot of people saying, oh yeah, mental health, man, speak out. If you're not feeling good, speak out about your mental health problems and there's someone who can fix that and blah, blah, blah. It's like, there actually is some merit, I think, to people being more honest. Instead of pretending that they're so happy. Oh yeah, I'm happy, man. I found the truth, or I found this church, or I found this workout program, or whatever. Just being honest and saying, nah, the truth is, man, I'm not that happy. I'm not depressed. I'm not fucking, I'm not upset. You know what I mean? I don't have any problems, but I'm happy. No. I don't breathe for every day feeling on top of the world. I have some days that are like that, but they're the exceptions. Usually I just feel like, yeah, another day. You know what I mean? I get satisfaction out of some things, but I don't have that inner sense of fulfillment that the TV tries to say that we should all have. I just don't have that. Maybe if more people were just honest about that, then the people who feel that way would be like, oh, it's not just me. No, it's not just you. It's not just you. Just speak to people and they'll usually tell you. I've found this a lot. Because people have so few people in their lives who will really listen to them, you know, most people have almost no one in their life who will really listen to them. If you come along and you'll just listen, you won't interrupt, you won't try and convince them to your way of thinking, you just listen. They can't wait to tell you everything, and they'll usually open up pretty quickly that they're miserable. Many people are miserable too, but even the ones who aren't miserable, like they're just, yeah, they're not very happy with things, you know. I think that's most people. I think that's more than half of people. I could be wrong, guys. I could just be in a particularly unhappy part of an unhappy country. I don't know. I don't know. I'd love to know your experiences, guys, but yeah. No, I'm definitely not pretending that I'm super happy. Definitely not. Not here to sell hope one bit. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, why didn't I take the blue pill? Yeah, the Matrix. Of course, you take the red pill and then you get to be with a whole bunch of other people who've taken the red pill. And okay, you live in a shitty ship with crappy food, but hey, you're all together. You've all got, and you've all got a mission and you could potentially take down the system. It's like, what if you take the red pill and actually the truth is that there is no taking down the system. There's no getting away from the system. You are part of the system. There's no hope for taking it down. Part of the red pill is accepting this is how it is. Or what if the Huxleys weren't evil after all? What if they were just telling us how it is? What if, can you entertain that thought? Can you entertain that possibility? Did I mention that I'm 10 weeks sober today, guys? 10 weeks sober today. Sunday, 10 weeks sober. Yeah, that's another thing, guys. Sobriety, I think it's much better for your body physically. And in many ways, better for your mental health. I think in some ways, you are better off being inebriated from time to time and just hanging out with other humans. I'm open-minded to that possibility, that for all of its downsides, maybe you are better off just once every little while, just drinking with other humans who are drinking for the sake of being in proximity. Because drinking makes things more interesting, more entertaining. It makes people more likely to spend time with other humans. Maybe for all of its downsides, maybe there are some benefits to it. I don't know. But yeah, 10 weeks sober. You see the world a different way, don't you? Do you? I don't know. Me personally, I feel like I do. Yeah. I don't know. You saw something, didn't you, Eddie? Something to do with the case. There is no case. There never was. It's all just a big joke. It's a joke. You have meddled with the forces of evil, Mr. Beale. And I won't have it. You think you've merely stopped a business deal. That is not the case. The Arabs have taken money out of this country, and now they must put it back. It is ebb and flow. You don't get it, do you, boys? There are no good guys anymore. These guys run the whole show. And they're going to let us make a little bit of money if we just help them. You'd like a little taste of the good life too, wouldn't you? Sure, we all would. Everybody knows shits. Fuck. I don't give a good goddamn if your Uncle Sam is a motherfucker. I don't want to see him again. Count to 10. Ah, yes, pop culture, guys. Pop culture. One little final note. I recently watched The Village for the first time in more than 10 years. I think The Village was released maybe 2004. I saw it when I was still in high school, so it can't have been later than 2006. Let me think. I could look it up, but yeah, mid 2000s, probably 10 years, I'd say, from when I saw it at the cinemas. I haven't seen it since then. I went back and watched it. This is, I think, Joaquin Phoenix. Is that how you pronounce that name? Joaquin Phoenix. I have no idea how you pronounce that name. I think he's in it. There's a few, there's a, one of the, Hurts is in it as well. Is it John Hurt or William Hurt or whatever his name is? There's a few people in there who you'd know. The chick from, Aliens is in there. I'm not really good with celebrities' names, but the point is The Village wasn't just some Joe Schmo film. There was, some big names in there. Anyway, the point of my story is I went back and rewatched that film recently. I had a sneaking suspicion from what I could remember of it that it might have some interesting concepts to think about, given what we know about the world in which we live today. And for those of you who haven't seen it, I don't want to spoil it, but at the same time, I know that when someone hears someone recommend a movie in a podcast, they almost never go and watch it. So I'm going to spoil it right now. It's a bit of a spoiler alert. Basically, the twist at the end of the film, and again, like I'm about to wrap this little ramble up, so if you are going to watch it, just end it right now. But for those of you who aren't, basically the twist at the end of the film is that this little village from like the 1800s, it looks like the mid-1800s, thereabouts, it's hard to tell, but this old village with no electricity and, you know, not much contact with the outside world other than the people in the village, no cars or anything like that. And an explicit desire not to mix with the outside world other than the village. The twist at the end is that it's not the 1850s. It's like much more recent times. Maybe not, you know, 2005, but certainly more recent than the 1850s or whatever. And what has happened is that a bunch of maybe 10 or 15 people who've had horrible things happen to them in modern society, like someone killing their brother for drug money or whatever, whatever the case is, they've decided they hate modern society. They want to go and start their own village where they raise their children to not know about the modern day. They believe that the village is how the world is. And so the idea is to keep the next generation in ignorance and then the generation behind them in ignorance. And that way, when the elders, the people who started the society, die out, no one will know. That's the plan. Their plan isn't to keep, from the way the film sort of ends, it doesn't look as though their plan is to keep inducting new elders to keep the secrets. It looks as though their plan is to sort of let the secrets die with them. That's what it seems like. Although then again, maybe they were planning to sort of induct a new generation of elders at the end. I guess that's a concept they didn't really explore.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on fakeologist.com.
But even if they were to do that, to induct a small group of elders, we would infer that the majority of the people would still remain oblivious, at least for most of their lives, about where they really are and what the world really is. They're just happy in their own little village. And I look at that and I think whoever does run the show today, whoever's behind all of these mass deceptions, if indeed there is one group behind all of it, which seems to me like a logical inference, I guess. It's almost like, how do we know how much they really know? You know what I mean? I mean, all of history is fake. I'm sure most of you are aware of that by now. There's ancient Rome or ancient Egypt. It's all, not only is it all fake, it's all quite obviously recently fabricated too. I mean, things like, the most ancient city in Europe, the oldest city in Europe, is a city known as Knossos, K-N-O-S-S-O-S. When was Knossos rediscovered? Oh, the late 1800s by Sir Arthur Evans. Oh, okay. And they able to decipher the ancient Greek texts. They've got linear A and linear B and, you know, three different people were able to decipher these texts and blah, 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 a lot of nonsense. Ancient Egypt, you know, a lot of the things that we think we know about ancient Egypt were discovered 100 years ago. Really? Wow. Okay. Interesting. Alrighty. Whatever, ancient South America, like the ancient Mayan culture or these kinds of things. What do we know about this? Oh, well, we discovered in the last 100 or so years. Okay, alrighty. Yeah, okay, I get it now. I get it. Or make believe, I get it. All right. Oh, the Bible. Oh, well, we have this Codex Sinaiticus. It was found in Mount Sinai 150 years ago. Oh, really? And the Codex Vaticanus, the two main texts that are used to verify the Bible. Oh, the Codex Vaticanus was discovered in the Vatican Library 150 years ago. Oh, really? Oh, okay. And it was the same dude who was involved in either the discovery or the translation or the transmission of both of those. Oh, okay, all right, I get it. All right, whatever. I'm with it now. But it's like, how do we know that the people who are behind all of this, how do we know that they know what happened before? Like, I'm telling you right now, I've got no idea when history started. I've got no idea. I don't know. I know that the official story is crap, but I don't really know when things did start. You know what I mean? I don't know. I definitely do not know. But I also don't know if the people who run the show know. For all I know, they don't know. For all I know, their stories, they're just giving us stories, you know, to control our minds or to keep the society humming along or whatever. Like, they're doing it for their own ends, for sure. But how do we know that they know the truth? You see what I'm trying to say here, guys? These are the questions that have been popping into my mind over the last few months. It's like, it's very easy to sit here and be like, oh, there are these people, they know everything, and they're just telling us lies. And it's like, well, we can agree on the lies part. I mean, you know, the planes into the buildings, this is just laughable. But how do we know what these people actually do know? And then you look at the planes going into the buildings. They could have faked that a lot better than they did. They could have faked that a lot better than they did if they wanted to. It's almost like they're putting that there as like a breadcrumb. It's like, guys, come on, man. You know, like a aluminium plane going to a building. If you look at that and you believe that, you probably better off believing our stories. Like, we're quite happy to keep giving you stories. That's the kind of creature you are. And we'll take care of you. But for any of you who do have any semblance of critical thinking capacity, you can tell that these footage is fake, okay? So, and we're not really doing much to hide that. I mean, it's pretty blatant. It's very blatant that this is a fake piece of footage. And the moon landings, I mean, the fucking gold foil covered lunar module, you know what I mean? It's like, they could have done a lot better than that if they wanted to, guys. I mean, if you watch Kubrick's 1968, 2001 A Space Odyssey, which was released in 1968, that's a masterpiece film, and I would argue that the special effects in that are much more convincing than what we've been given about the moon landings. So they definitely had the technology to fake the moon landings better than they did, and they just didn't bother. It's almost like they're putting that out there as a breadcrumb or like a litmus test. It's like, guys, we went to the moon, guys, you know, like wink, wink. And the vast majority of the audience are like, oh, wow, they went to the moon. And there's a few of us going, oh, guys, they're winking at us. Like, what the fuck? Like, it's like a little wink. It's like, there you go, guys. It's all make-believe. I mean, you don't have to believe us. In fact, some of you might be, you know, you might see through this nonsense. We're kind of making it obvious for you guys, you know. And I'm just not convinced that these people are malevolent. And that's another thing, too, in this whole activism scene. It's like, no, man, they're definitely evil. They're definitely trying to kill us, blah, blah, blah. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about, man? If they wanted any of us dead, we'd be dead right now, okay? Most of the people who are killing themselves, they're killing themselves. They're eating shit food. Oh, but that's someone else's fault that they're eating shit food. What the fuck are you talking about? If I eat shit food, that's no one's fault but mine, bro. You know what I mean? Oh, well, they're forcing us to vaccinate. No, they're not. Like, in my country, they'll give you less tax money back in your tax return if you don't vaccinate your children. But any parent who knows the dangers of vaccines and then does it anyway for money, how the hell are they? How the hell is it the people who run the show who are more evil than the parents who've just taken money over their own children's safety? Do you know what I mean? Like, let's think through this a little bit further. How evil are the people who run the show, and how much do they really know? Do you know what I mean? How many people on this earth actually know how we all got here? Seriously. Does anyone actually know how we all got here? I mean, like, I know many people think they know, oh, we evolved over millions. You know, there was this big bang and some lightning struck some fucking primordial soup and blah, blah, blah. It's like taking away that complete insane nonsense. Is there anyone who actually does know how we got here? There might be, guys. I don't know. But why do we just assume that the people telling the lies, that they know how we got here? I don't assume that anymore. I don't assume that they know. I don't assume that they're evil. Definitely don't assume that they're sending boogeymen to come and spy on me or whatever. I just don't know. But anyway, enough rambling from me, guys. That'll do. That'll do. It's been a long, long ramble. Got a lot off my chest. Thanks again to Abbott. So, see you guys. Just recapping. Three different articles there. I'll post links to those. I'll make a post for this on my website. I'll call it JLB's Fakeologist Ramble. And, yeah, I'll post a link to those three articles, but, you know, you get the idea. That's the official story. Are people really that medicated? based on what I've seen, I would say, yeah, I would believe that. But either way, there's lots of very unhealthy people out there. Lifestyle leading to poor health, which isn't medicated. And, of course, people who are unhappy, which, given the way the world is, that's really no surprise, especially people. And the fact that it's women over 60, that in itself says a lot about the way the world currently is and what we're telling women about, you know, their purpose. Oh, yeah, go and get a career and fucking only have one or two kids, tops. Yeah, that's a way to lead a happy life. Women, go and do that. Go and fucking earn money and waste money throughout your 20s. Ride the cock carousel and earn and waste money through your 20s and then settle down in your 30s. And, yeah, that's a path to happiness. And then in 20 years, you'll be coming to doctors getting medications for unhappiness, because you will be if that's a path you take. So yeah, but I think a lot of people are unhappy. It's just because they're lacking things that, given the way the world is, of course they're lacking. A lot of us are. Doesn't mean that you're mentally unwell. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with your brain. It's just a natural reaction to the situation the way that it currently is. There are many people out there who will try and profit from it. Make no mistake about that. They'll sell you some hope in a bottle. And, yeah. Anyway, enough's enough. 10 weeks sober, guys. 2 more weeks to go. I promised myself 12 weeks. No alcohol, not a drop. I've made it to 10 weeks. Not a drop of alcohol for 10 weeks. I've made it. I'm feeling fitter. I'm feeling stronger. Like, I'm definitely physically healthier. I'm not dead about that, but yeah. Anyway, enough about all of that, guys. 30 July. Where does the time go? So there you go, guys. On the 30th of July, oh, that's right. The other thing I talked about was this boogeyman nonsense. Guys, if you feel good believing in boogeymen, I say keep believing it. Keep believing in the boogeyman. Whatever makes you happy. It gives you purpose. That would give some people purpose, wouldn't it? It'd be like, oh, we're definitely on the right track here, guys. We're getting the truth. We've got the truth, guys. That's why they're sending the boogeyman. You cop the most flack when you're over the target, and we're copping boogeymen left, right, and center. So we must be right over the target, guys. Yeah. So, guys, if you believe in the boogeyman, by all means, keep believing. Like, whatever makes you happy, that's the most important thing I say. But, yeah, for those of you who are out there who do wonder about this boogeyman meme, the Paige Shills meme, don't worry, you're not alone. There are other people out there who are like, actually, maybe there aren't these boogeymen. Maybe these boogeymen are fake boogeymen. You know, maybe Kim Jong-il is for the masses, and the Paige Shills are for the activism scene, for the truthers. Like, hey, masses, you need Donald Trump or Hillary or whoever to save you from Kim Jong-il. And hey, truthers, you need to be on the lookout for those Paige Shill boogeymen. They could be anywhere. Be one under your bed right now, just taking notes about what you truthers are saying. Oh, yeah, you cracked the code on Sandy Hook. You worked out that the Robbie Parker was CGI, and there's a boogeyman under your bed taking notes to take back to HQ. Your boss, they're onto our CGI Robbie Parker. Whoever you're paying for your CGI is not doing a good enough job, because they cracked the code. They cracked the case. The fakeologist cracked the CGI Sandy Hook case, boss. You need to hire some better CGI experts. I've got a candidate to recruit. He goes by the name Zal from Norway. He's a CGI expert. Let's make him an offer that he can't refuse. And then next time we pull off a CGI fakery, we'll make the CGI more believable, boss. Ooh, we'll get the next one past the fakeologists, because they got us on this one. Been taking notes, boss. Maybe that's happening. I doubt it. I seriously doubt it. But, and if you doubt it, don't worry, you're not alone. But if you believe in the boogeyman, you're definitely not alone either. You're seen. Boy, oh boy, do they love worrying about boogeymen. Gives them a sense of purpose, you know. Gives them validation. Validates what they're doing. We all need validation, guys. It seems like it's part of the human condition. What humans also need is sleep. So at 11:15 PM on Sunday, the 30th of July, 2017, John the Bond signing off. And until next time, guys, you take care of yourselves. I want to leave you with a little quote, my favorite quote of all time. I love this quote. Don Marquis once said that if you make people think they're thinking, they'll love you. But if you make people really think, they'll hate you. Toodles.
Hi, I'm Psyopticon, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio.